Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We'll go ahead and get the meeting started. This is the September 25th, 2007, meeting of the Board of Education, West Covina Unified School District. We will call this evening's open session at 7:04. We'll leave this evening with an invocation led by Tammy Bolas and Spencer Lucy Kreisel.
Please join me. Dear Lord, we want to thank you for the opportunity to educate the students in this community. And be with us this evening as we make decisions that affect the students' lives. In his name we pray. Amen.
Please join me in our pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Haas?
Here.
Ben?
Here.
Ms. Shoemaker?
Here.
Mr. Fuller?
Here.
Mrs. Polis?
Here.
Ms. Wong?
Here.
Ms. Epstein?
Here.
Thank you. We had no action items taken in closed session this evening. Any board member reports? None. We'll go then to the next item, which is items from the floor for public comment. I have one blue card. Oh, excuse me, Gisette, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, it's okay.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll go and really fast. Okay, do I stand up or I can sit down?
Sit down, make yourself comfortable.
Okay.
We're family.
Okay. I want to thank you guys for coming to welcome back to school night. That was lovely. We had a good turnout. And academic-wise, we're being the host of the PSAT coming in October. And our sports, water polo, they're doing really well. They're 5-2 right now. Football's 2-1. Tennis is doing really cool. Volleyball just won against San Dimas. And cross-country had their first league meet today. I just came back from there. Okay, sorry. And then Taste of West Covina tickets are sold for $45. And if you're interested, please contact Ms. Wong at West Covina High School, the ASB advisor.
Okay, thank you very much.
I have a question. Are they still left? I was told that they were all sold out.
No, I think they have more tickets. Yeah, there's more. They keep printing them.
Yeah. Oh. Okay, just like money.
Yeah, because people just print them.
And how did Lenore do, you know?
Oh, I don't know. I had to right after I finished racing, I was like, I have to go.
After you finished racing?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk. And first to speak this evening to address the board and public comment is Mike Sturgeon.
Thank you, board. My name is Mike Sturgeon, and as you know, I was the contractor for a project at the Coronado Alternative School over at 614 Vine. And I've come this evening from San Diego, and I'm going back to San Diego tomorrow, but I knew you had a board meeting tonight, so I wanted to come tonight to speak to the board. And the question I have for the board is, how important is honesty and fair practice in the business dealings that the West Covina persons who are hired by the district, that they act with honesty? When we entered into a public contract with the West Covina and the architect was dismissed by the district for whatever reasons, and the district got into a lawsuit with the contractor, with the architect, we were given a new architect, and the very first thing, the very first meeting that we had with the architect in the room back over here was where we were basically browbeat, cursed at, simply because we disagreed with the architect. Is that the kind of business dealings when we've never even met the person, and use four-letter words from a person who's hired by the school district, when we simply say, well, we don't agree with your points. When a contractor takes on a project, the first thing that the contractor needs is to partner together with whoever is on the other side of the table in order to get a project completed. And in our second meeting with the architect, and all of the business dealings that we have through the maintenance director are all under the eye of Ruben Frutos. So whatever is done back there in the room, it either gets Ruben's, either his approval or his wink. And at the second meeting, I said to the architect, with the assistant superintendent, or with the maintenance director in the room, I said to him, you know, it's our understanding, and there's nine people in the room, and I'm in there by myself. And I said to the architect, you know, when we do a contract with whoever, it's implied in a contract that there is a covenant of good faith, which means that each side will work together in order to try to get it done, in order to try to get the project done. If there's not any help from the side of the owner, but rather opposition, you can't get anything done. We couldn't get anything done. The other contractors, USS Cal Builders and MCEC, they couldn't get anything done with the same situation. And because we're the smallest of the three contractors, it's really impossible for us to really do anything. And I said to the architect, you know, there is this implied covenant of good faith where you work together. And you know what the architect said, your new architect that you've hired when you've replaced NTD, and you have this new, as they were boasting how much better they are than NTD architects, your new architect said, rather than saying, yeah, that's right, or yeah, we're going to work with you, or yeah, we're going to try and get it done, you know what they said? They said, because I said there's a covenant of good faith, because people should work together, they said, we will cancel your contract. Basically, what has happened to us is a strong arming on the part of the district, on the part of the district's representative, Mr. Frutos, where the contract is used in such a way to get free work or free something out of the contractor. That's what happened to us. That's what happened to the other contractors as well. The change orders that we did in June of 06, a year ago, we were never paid for those. There was never anything even processed for them. I guess I started out asking a question. Do you five people, as elected board members, where you say, you start your meeting saying, you know, God, we want to make the right decision? And certainly, I agree with that. I think a person should, you have a lot of decisions to make. There's a whole packet of things you have to make quick decisions on. You're relying on the people that you've hired. And so most of it's just kind of rubber stamped, as it has to be in order to get done. and you're relying on those decisions. But you it seems to me that you five people, when you have your duties, that you take those duties seriously. Not only that, you're even in asking, saying, well, God, help me to make the right decision. I don't even know what the right decision is. But I want to make the right decision. I want to do what's right. If you're doing that, and then you're saying, and help me in Jesus' name, I mean, then how can you in this room say that, where you're wanting to make the right decision, and then in that room right over there, basically a contractors are just basically beaten up and raped, for lack of a better word. And you say, well, where is the truth? I ask a question. As a board member, as you as board members, are you interested in the truth? And here's the truth. It's very simple. All of the meetings are recorded. They're all taped. And what's happened to us and what's happened to the other ones, it's all there. And I'm going to ask to get those tapes. And then what I'm going to do is, I only get 5 minutes to speak, and so I'm going to stop, because I respectfully thank you for the 5 minutes. But if you want to know the truth, I'm going to get it, I'm going to come back, and I'm going to begin to share with you examples of what was done and what was done wrongly. And I'm asking you people to make it right. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Would anybody else like to address the board at this time? We'll go to the business session. Would anybody like to add or remove anything from the consent agenda?
I'll approve the agenda as written.
It's been moved and seconded. Any objections? The motion is so ordered. The first item on the agenda is the
information report.
AYP.
Number six, I'm sorry. The information report. On the district data and scores, the 2006-2007 STAR test, as well as updates from the annual yearly progress and academic performance index.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to call on Assistant Superintendent Jan Fickett.
Good evening, board members, Superintendent Castillo, Ms. Ron, members of the cabinet, studio audience, or just audience, we're not really in a studio. Thank you for inviting us here tonight. As you can see from the screen or from your packet, the name of our presentation tonight is How Data Informs Decision-Making to Achieve Goals at West Covina Unified School District. And to set the context for this presentation, I think it would be helpful for you to know that this year the superintendent has asked principals to change the format of the presentations they make to you at your board meetings. So they're being asked to share their data with you and explain how an analysis of that data influences the decisions they make and the actions they take at their schools. All schools then this year will be following a format for their presentations that includes these elements. First of all, they will be analyzing and summarizing specific data used, and generally that's going to be STAR data, and in the case of the high school, they'll also be including CASE data. They'll be identifying underperforming subgroups or subgroup for intervention, and then they're going to identify additional data and other indicators that they might be using to further understand why they need to focus on a certain group, because one test score alone isn't going to really give us enough information. And then they're going to explain to you why those indicators were selected. They're going to present their findings, and then they're going to describe action steps taken as a result of this analysis. So tonight, Kim Crissy, Coordinator of Assessment and Instructional Technology, and I will be making a similar presentation to you, but we'll be looking at district-wide data. And the point of this analysis and subsequent actions that we'll be discussing is to demonstrate how the decisions we make based on the data should help schools achieve the goals that you established in the spring of the 2005-06 school year. And just as a reminder, these are the goals that you established. By 2010, all schools will meet or exceed the state academic performance index target of 800. And by 2010, all schools will exceed the federal requirement for the percentage of students proficient in English language arts, 56.8%, and mathematics, 58%. So in keeping with this presentation format, then, Kim Crissy now will provide an analysis and summary of our district data, just as the schools will be doing when they make their presentations.
Before I begin, just a note, in the back of your packet are the data charts with the scores and the data used to arrive at these analysis and summary slides for you to look at a later time. Starting with the goal of all schools reaching an API score of 800 by 2010, we have three elementary schools that have already met or exceeded that target, and disappointingly one at 799, so close. But the remaining elementary schools are well on their way. They have an average of 2.8 percentage points away from reaching that goal, and they have the next 3 years to meet it. One elementary school's API did decrease by 3 points. Again, at the API, looking at secondary schools, one of our middle schools increased, one went down. On average, they're about 7.7 percentage points away from meeting the target of 800. West Covina High School's API did go down, and they have 8.9 percentage points to get back to the 800 goal, and Coronado's API did increase last year. As you look at the differences between the elementary and the secondary schools, it's important to note that API is calculated differently at the different grade spans because different tests are used. At the high school, there are more tests involved between the KC and extra science tests. Middle school have different tests than elementary, so different tests go into the calculations. So comparing from elementary to middle to high school, it's not an exact straight comparison. Also, from year to year, what the state includes in the API comparison, API calculations changes. So going back several years and looking at how growth has been made, different tests have gone into and different percentages and formulas have gone into making those API scores. Looking at the AYP goal for percentage of students who will be proficient or advanced in language arts and math, for the elementary schools, two of them have already met the language arts proficiency goal, and six elementary schools have already met the math proficiency goal set for 2010. The proficiency rates in language arts and math have gone up at all the elementary schools except for two. So even if they haven't met the 2010 goal, progress is being made. At the six elementary schools who have not yet met the language arts proficiency goal, they on average have about 10.4 percentage points to increase in the next 3 years. And if three elementary schools who have not met the math target yet, they're on average have 2.2 percentage points. So math is very close to making the 2010 goal early. At the high school secondary level, the language arts and math proficiency rates are relatively flat, a little fluctuation up, a little fluctuation down, but they're about 40% proficient or advanced in language arts and math, give or take, depending on the school and the subject area. On average at the secondary level, they need to improve 9.7 percentage points in language arts and 16.9 percentage points in math to make the 2010 goals. In addition to looking at individual school results, we also look at the district results to get the big picture of where how the district is moving. The district API, since it started being reported in 2003, has increased by 59 points. In 2003, it was 700. Makes it easy to do the math. Now we're at 759, so it's a 59-point increase. The API scores for all of our significant subgroups have also increased over that time, but they are still there are some subgroups that are performing underneath other subgroups, so we still have some disparity in how all students are achieving. Okay, going back to the outline of the template that the schools will be presenting to you, the next part would be to identify underperforming subgroups. In addition to doing that here for the district, we'll also be looking at schools who will be targeting for extra assistance based on how they've been performing. So we're at the district level, we're targeting schools with declining API scores. We noted that there are low proficiency rates in mathematics at all secondary schools. That's an issue at the secondary level. We're going to focus on the English learners subgroup. There are other subgroups that we need to move forward. But with English learners, there's overlap with other subgroups, so we feel it's a purposeful and targeted area that we can get improvement over multiple subgroups by focusing strictly on English learners. That's not to say we're not going to worry about anybody else, but as the main target and focus, that's going to be the English learners. And, of course, our program improvement school will continue to get our additional support. In the school report, they will also identify other indicators they used. And again, at the district level, these are some other indicators we considered. Curriculum alignment, to make sure that what is being taught is not just the textbook, but it's matching the standards, which is data set, which is what is covered on the CSTs and on the CASE. Program implementation, we have programs in place, but if they're not followed as the publisher or creators have intended, we're not going to get the most out of them. Grading practices, to make sure that standards-based grading practices are going along in the classroom, so there's going to be more parity between how students do on the CSTs and how they're doing in the classroom. Looking at CELT scores for our English learners to see, are they improving year after year, or have they flatlined or worse yet even slid back in their English fluency? Looking at the instructional strategies being used in classrooms to see that they're meeting the needs of all learners. And looking at benchmark results to see if those are being used to help guide instruction in the subsequent quarter or marking period or however often they're being given. Now, the last part of the presentation will be talking about the action steps that we as a district will be taking based on this data, and Jan Pickett will take you through the action steps.
Thank you. Well, the data tells us that we're making strides towards reaching the 800 API mark and to reaching the proficiency rates in English language arts and math. It also tells us that to reach the goals, we need to be very strategic, and we need to differentiate the support we're offering to schools in their efforts to reach all students. So we've kind of divided our action steps or named our action steps in three categories, and the first category is district-wide action steps. So that's what we're going to look at next. You may remember that when you establish the goals, you also establish strategies to reach those goals. And this year, the superintendent has asked us to put a greater emphasis on two of those goals. The first one is frequent monitoring of teaching and learning, because as we all know, it's the interaction between teacher and student that affects student achievement or not. And the issue of focused professional development, because we here at West Covina have a gift of time for professional development that we really need to make good use of and use wisely. So those are two areas in our district goals that we'll be focusing on. So let's look at frequent monitoring of teaching and learning. We are working with principals so that they can work with their teachers to establish goals and objectives that address the achievement of district goals and nothing else, so that their goals and objectives are very purposeful and pointed. We are also working with principals on going with them on formal and informal observations and monitoring their schedules for informal and formal observations. And we're working with principals so that they're able to provide appropriate assistance and guidance and feedback to teachers who need it. And then finally, we are monitoring for SDAI strategies. SDAI is an acronym for Specially Designed Academic Instruction in English, and those are strategies that apply to English learners. So most of our teachers have been trained in SDAI strategies, so we of course would be looking for them if they have English learners in their classroom. Other district-wide action steps that we're doing address the area of focused professional development. We are providing district-sponsored training to schools, to school teams, on differentiated instruction. Now, differentiated instruction has to do with providing access to the curriculum for all students, be they GATE students, be they special ed students, be they English learners, be whomever. And we're at the point where, our test scores being what they are, we need to be very strategic about how we meet the needs of all learners. And this is an approach, this direct differentiated instruction is an approach that we feel can be beneficial. So as a matter of fact, today we had our first training, and school teams from our elementary schools came in the morning and afternoon and participated. These same teams will be coming throughout the course of the year and will become the experts at their schools, hopefully, in differentiated instruction. And just by the way they were interacting with the presenter and laughing and doing things this afternoon and this morning, I think they were getting something out of it. At least I hope so. So that is something we are providing to all of our schools. Thursday we'll be working with our secondary schools. We are also hoping to maximize the use of available professional development time, those shortened Wednesdays, by actually designating what they're being used for. For example, we've decided that the first and third Wednesdays at the elementary level will be used for grade level meetings. And we're doing that so that if we needed to pull out the kindergarten teachers to work on the new benchmark assessments, we could do that because we know which Wednesdays they'll all be available. We are also hoping to increase the capacity at school sites for instructional leadership. You may remember that we had literacy coaches. We kind of dissolved that that job description and created another one called instructional support specialists. And there's one of them at every elementary school. Their responsibility is to support the principal with professional development and with the understanding and use of the data that's produced through Edusoft. We have not abandoned the secondary just because we have these ISSs at our elementary schools, because we are working now with the department chairpersons at the secondary level on how to develop formative assessments and how to understand data analysis. We are also providing tools for effective meetings. So when we train the ISSs and department chairs, we are actually creating agendas with them. We are providing protocols for them so that their meetings become more effective. Some other types of district-wide action steps that we're taking are, we are providing technology that supports the instructional program, and here's an example. As you know, social sciences textbooks were adopted last year. Critical component of any new textbook these days is interactive technology. So we have purchased projectors for all secondary social sciences teachers and upper grade elementary teachers so that they can put this new technology into practice right away. We had professional development last week, on that. Teachers are very excited about this new technology, and they're ready to hit the ground running, which is a good thing. We are also providing technology that supports assessment and assessment analysis, specifically Edusoft. And this is a request that came actually from our elementary principals. Some of our elementary schools don't have computer labs, so teachers really weren't able to get together to play with their data and look at it and make decisions about it. So it was decided that if we created pods, we're calling them, at each grade level so that those grade level teachers could meet together to discuss their data and make decisions about it, we would be accomplishing something good. So those computers have been ordered and they're being set up as we speak. Another district-wide action step is we are identifying effective intervention and supplemental programs. This is something that we're just beginning to work on. We haven't identified them yet. We need to, because what we have right now is a hodgepodge of things going on, some good, some not so good. But we want to be able to identify for sure those programs that are really going to help our kids. We're also discontinuing the use of inappropriate programs or practices. You know, sometimes we get on automatic pilot and we keep doing what we always did, and then sometimes we get what we always got. And in a couple of cases, we've made some changes and recommendations to abandon something and try something new. We are closely monitoring instructional schedules, particularly at the elementary level for ELD. If we're looking at English learners, we have to make sure that they're getting English language development instruction, which is core to their program. And then finally, we're looking at allocating fiscal and human resources to support the achievement of district goals, and that sounds like a big empty promise, maybe, and it's not. I really need to assure you that in the spring, we take careful look at the budget and what our goals are and make sure that we don't spend anything on anything else. We really try to stay focused on our goals and how we allocate human and fiscal resources. Another type of action step that we decided to put in place has to do with instructional improvement. And as Kim told us, our secondary mathematics scores are not very good. And so we really need to zero in on mathematics instruction at the secondary level. So some of the things that we've put into place already are we have hired and trained math coaches and an expert, and we are using the services of a consultant from Cal Poly. This person comes to us through the grant that we are participating in, but she has taken a liking to us because she happens to live in West Covina, and so during the summer she actually went and met with teachers, and she's become kind of a friend to some of them, and it's really helping them to change some of the instructional practices that they're using in their classroom. Many of our teachers have participated in item training, which is a mathematics training, obviously, and this summer we spent a couple of weeks revamping with the middle school teachers and this consultant the whole entire middle school mathematics program. So we've aligned pacing guides, we've aligned standards, and we've incorporated strategies in these pacing guides that hopefully will help children learn the mathematics concepts better. We're working with the math department at the high school on aligning course content with standards. The Algebra 2 scores at the high school were pretty disappointing this year, and it was kind of a wake-up call. So the teachers have been very eager to get together to talk about the standards that are being taught and matching that with the curriculum they're using, and voila, sometimes they don't match. So therein lies the problem. We are looking at how programs are implemented and actually connecting it to teacher evaluation. You know, we spend a lot of time and money sending teachers to professional development and buying manipulatives and things like that. And sometimes when you go into a classroom, you see what you always saw before. And so we're making sure now that when teachers write their objectives, that they're incorporating those strategies that they've learned through this training. And then when principals walk through, that's what they expect to see. And we have reduced class sizes for some algebra and geometry classes at the middle school and high school. Another area for instructional improvement is English language development. And it's mostly making sure that English language development happens at the elementary school. And it happens best when students are strategically grouped. If you have five levels of English learners in your classroom, the chances of teaching five ELD lessons in one day are slim to none because you just don't have enough time to do it. So we're making sure that no more than two levels of EL students are in any one classroom so that English language development is, in fact, a feasible subject to teach and learn. And interestingly, as we really dug deep into the data, we found that our RFEP students were the group that actually went down this year at the middle school. RFEP students are reclassified fluent English proficient students. And we tend to, once they're reclassified, say, oh, this is great. But they stay in the system for 2 years. And so we noticed that this group went down. So we have grouped them into the homerooms of the language arts teachers so that they can pay a particular attention to them, and we're actually designing instruction for them. So we're hoping, because they're sort of the bubble group for us now, that we can push them up and hopefully improve our scores. Another type of action step that we're doing is we're targeting specific schools for extra assistance. So in some cases, we've provided additional staffing, whether it's a teacher or a part-time person or even noon aides or whatever. We've also provided additional fiscal resources for selected schools so that they can expand instructional programs, for example, Waterford at kindergarten or Step Up to Writing, which is a writing program that one principal felt would be really useful to her school. We, as you know, have realigned grade levels at three of our schools, and we've added sixth grade, which has had a benefit to Edgewood because it's reduced its population a little bit. And also in those sixth grades, we've really created state-of-the-art technology laboratories for students and teachers that we're hoping will kind of set the standard for our district. We support principals directly with professional development activities. We go and help the principal plan it, and we go and actually help deliver it and make sure that it's being implemented in the classrooms by participating in walkthroughs. And then finally, we have reduced class size in specific classes at the secondary level. So in conclusion, these are some of the decisions and actions that we're taking based on analysis of our district data and some other indicators. And at subsequent board meetings, you should be seeing presentations similar to this made by your principals. Thank you.
Questions?
What programs were abandoned?
Well, I can give you two examples. There was a reading program we were using in special day classes at the middle school. And we monitored the data throughout the year, and we were seeing no change in student progress. So we abandoned that, and we're trying something new this year. Another, we didn't abandon the program, but we abandoned the way Accelerated Reader is being used at Edgewood because it was involved in their grading policy that we felt was detrimental to one group of children. So we have changed that policy, that grading policy. So while we're still doing Accelerated Reader, it doesn't really serve the same purpose.
George?
How are we monitoring professional development at the time? Like, it's nice that everybody come together in a grade. How are we making sure that functions in the manner that we expect it to function? Like every first and Thursday or Wednesday, they come together as a grade level, that we're getting maximum production out of that meeting.
In a couple of ways. The superintendent talks about that at every principal's meeting. She is holding principals accountable for making sure that professional development is meaningful and focused. The instructional support specialist is planning with us, and they are responsible for helping to deliver it in conjunction with the principal. And we actually go out and visit. I mean, we can't go to everyone every Wednesday, but you know, we are actually going out and assisting or walking through.
So the ISP is actually planning.
Instructional support specialist. Specialist.
Specialist.
Yes.
ISS.
I know it's already taken on an acronym. We don't wait a minute, do we?
Anyway, that person is going out and working with the principal to make sure that come Wednesday.
Yes. Yes. We are giving that person the tools to use at those grade level meetings and professional developments. We're working with the principal and with them. The instructional support specialist meets with us every Friday afternoon.
On slide 17, you talked about leveling the EL classes where there's only two levels. It says monitor implementation at the elementary levels, and there's only going to be two levels.
Well, that's our goal. That's not always possible, but we wouldn't want more than two if we can do it.
And then I was going to ask if there's a limited number of students, but multiple levels, how is that going to be addressed? So they couldn't be, if you have 10 students and they're at five different levels, well, how are you going to divide them into two levels?
Well, I think what I meant to say was that we wouldn't want more than two levels in one classroom.
Right, so but if there's 10 students.
Right, throughout every grade level, you mean?
No.
Or let's say 10 at first grade.
Right.
And they're at five levels.
Then
I'd put one and two in one room and two and three. I mean, three and four in another room.
Okay, so then that you would divide it that way.
Yes.
Okay. I was just trying to figure out if, and then all 10 aren't in the same class.
No.
And then the secondary classes that you have reduced class size for some students in math.
Yes.
How are the classes selected that are going to have reduced class size, and what students are selected to be in those reduced
We looked at the far below basic and basic students, and those are the students at the middle school level who are getting reduced class size in biology. At the high school, at the high school level, we've reduced class size in geometry, and what we did was, the math department and Judith Jacobs, our consultant, created a test for algebra students to see if they had an understanding of potential geometry concepts, because at the high school what they were doing was not allowing children with certain grades in algebra to take geometry, and we thought that maybe that was a disconnect. So they created a test, and some students passed that test and are now in these reduced size geometry classes.
At what point in time do we administer that? At the end of the program? Or
When did they do that? I don't know if they did that in September or June. June.
Oh, really?
June. So you'll see many more geometry classes at the high school than you saw before, which is a good thing, because what we want to do is have more kids ready for UC.
Well, but actually I was going to go a step further. We're still on board with the algebra in eighth grade.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
For that.
Yes.
And, you would think that if they're ready coming out, I know there's been a lot of objection or concern, I guess would be a better word, of that they're not ready at that point in time. Is that still?
Well, that's why we're doing a lot of the things we're doing at the middle school. We have revamped, the math program there. We've reduced class size in algebra in eighth grade in some of those classes, and we've really focused on changing the instructional strategies that they're using. We're holding teachers accountable to do that, because we want more kids to be successful in eighth grade, so they'll be successful at the high school too.
And it is, what's Rich's last name?
Nambu.
Nambu.
Apparently has quite a background in mathematics.
Yes, he does.
Out of L.A. I had an opportunity at the back of school, and I could talk to some of the math teachers there, and they were real excited about the impact that he's having already in this short period of time. So,
And he's worked with the high school teachers, too.
Is that right?
We're sharing the wealth here.
Yeah, well, that's great. George?
Yeah, this one. You hit upon something that I've noticed, too, that for some reason, especially at the elementary level, math is beginning to exceed elementary, I mean, English language arts.
Yes.
Noticeably. Is there a reason we can...
Well, it's less language dependent. Could be one reason.
So, in other words, we have students capable of learning when we apply it.
Absolutely.
I had a couple questions, and I obviously I've been an advocate of the new format or something similar to that for a while now, and how we're going to get that. Are we going to start? I guess the question is how are we going to start, because when I look at here, you know, if we just take the ELA scores, you know, Edison's our highest, but then our two lowest schools are West Cove, which is our second lowest. And it started out as our lowest, but it's our second lowest now. And they've made some improvement, but they're our second lowest. And, of course, Melinda is our lowest. And Melinda is the only school that slid for 3 years. You know, sometimes these scores, you know, go back and forth, but Melinda's gone down 3 years in a row. It's the only school that has. Is that the first school we're going to have up, Melinda? Or, I mean, what's the standard we're going to start with the schools that, you know,
yes, Merlinda and West Cove are two of the schools who are getting some of these additional resources. And, you know, as you know, there's a new principal now at Merlinda, and she's looking very carefully at the programs there, and we'll be making decisions during the course of the year.
And your question is, in terms of board presentation, will they be one of the first?
Yeah, I mean, because it would seem to me, I mean, obviously, you know, we've dealt with Edison, you know, 5, 15 in a row. I don't know if we want to deal with an Edison presentation right after, you know, the school starts again.
Right.
But, you know, and I've wanted to focus on the lower performing schools, you know, and it just seems to me when you look at the trend, Merlinda going down, you know, 3 years in a row, being our lowest performing, West Cove, which started out as our second lowest, is still our second lowest, going from 2002-07, I mean, there's variations in between.
Yep.
Those seem a lot logical, and, you know, they also had, just eyeballing it, our lowest number of growth between those 5 years. And so, you know, all our schools have had growth, but those have only, you know, that. And on math, you know, it's our middle school scores that are the lowest. Now, Edgewood has doubled the number of kids, you know, that are meeting the AYP, which is great. And they're almost catching Hollandcrest, which, you know, has only improved, you know, very little when you look at it. I mean, same with California. I mean, California started out with this huge number and then just has never really built on it. I mean, if you look at it over time.
And it's, you know, it's interesting, too, that Edgewood, our program improvement school, is the one that has improved every year since we've been doing API.
Right, yeah. Well, it's the subgroup that causes the trouble. Right. I mean, that's the problem. It's the subgroup
and
issue.
Now we think we've identified those RFEPs.
Students, oh, I know.
We have those RFEPs numbered now, so.
I know, it's the three students. I know.
No, it's more than that.
Well, this last time I think it was three students. In one subgroup it was three students, but, you know, they didn't make it. But, you know, it just seems, you know, odd to me, you know, when you look at the middle school programs, you know, that they're getting close to being roughly equal, you know, which means Hollandcrest is not improving, you know, while Edgewood has. And I bet you the perception of the community is not that, if you were to ask them. But, I mean, that is the reality, you know, when you look at the AYP numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we've noticed that, too.
And so, I mean, you know, but it seems to me that's where we have to have the discussion. I mean, the high school, you know, is still an issue. But, you know, and California's growth isn't there, and you know, at all over that time period. I mean, there's been very little growth over that. Again, they started out high, you know, with the huge number, but it's...
But they're coming back.
What's the purpose for that? I mean, you know, how do we explain that? You know.
Can I try?
Well, California wasn't always high.
Well, look at 2002 to 2007. I mean, look at the scores here.
Yeah, I can remember.
I mean, it started out at 65, and now it's a 68.8. I mean.
I can remember the day.
One of the things that happens in terms of growth when you look at data over time is that a school can continue to do well with the kids that are doing well. But until they go and reach the kids that are going to bump them up,
exactly,
they're never going to get to the place where they need to be.
So
and so that's that's probably true of even high-performing schools,
agreed,
that they could be higher because they're you know, the kids that are doing well continue to do well, but the ones that are doing poor continue to do bad.
And you know, I absolutely agree with that. And so I hope part of this presentation is they'll tell us how they're customizing
exactly,
you know, their
the
programs
point
to reach those kids that
exactly
aren't meeting. I mean, because that's obviously the next step. I mean,
exactly.
You know, I feel that, you know, we've got a lot of that low-hanging fruit.
That's right.
You know, that can be done with the scatter.
That's right.
You know, I'm not going to say shotguns in schools because that'd be a, but I better not do that.
Approach.
But, you know, a broad,
yeah,
broad brush of stuff. And, you know, we've grabbed all that stuff. We've grabbed all that. But now it's, you know, it's hard because you got to focus on specific components. And that means specific kids.
Exactly.
So these things coming to us will have how they're customizing
exactly
instruction.
Yes. Exactly.
What they're going to do differently.
Exactly.
Than what they're currently doing.
Exactly.
Promise.
Exactly. We promise. We promise. Well, let me tell you, let me just share with you. This is a very new approach for public meetings and for boards of education. Most of the districts that I have studied always cheerlead for the good things that they're doing.
Right. And there's some good stuff in here.
And there's wonderful things in here. And we've said to principals, you need to acknowledge that, but you also need to acknowledge what isn't working and what you're going to do about it and which kids aren't being reached and what methods you'll be trying. So this morning and during the last 2 weeks, we've been looking at it as a district and saying, okay, we're going to step up the plate and say, yes, our high school went down. What did we learn from that? Well, we saw the math department. What else did we learn from that? Well, we're actually identifying students like RFEPs at different places that didn't do well. And so until we use the data very scientifically to say this student in this class and this teacher and this methodology, we're not going to be able to fix it. In discussing this with the principals, of course, it is a little bit nerve-wracking to have to come to the board and in a public meeting say, here's what we're doing well, here's what we're not doing so well at, and have to improve, because there is an accountability factor involved in that. However, when those numbers come out, okay, when numbers come out, they're impacted in different ways. And what we want you to know is that we're being thoughtful about our approach to remedy it. Do we feel 100% sure that our remedies are going to work for all kids all the time? No. But we're going to be able to articulate if it isn't working what we're going to do about it. And we do need to start abandoning more things that are not working in terms of how we use our resources and our you know, our time.
What's the third school that's realigned? If Merlinda and Wesco were two of the schools being realigned, what was
Monta
the third?
Vista.
Monta Vista.
Yeah. And on Merlinda, I just want to say an important point, I think, for the record. When I began here as superintendent, Dr. Vladovic said to me that he was ready to do away with the program that they've had for 6 years at the time. And you know they've been in Success for All for a long time. I believe probably 8 years now. And in that time, they reached their kind of, they were at 800 at one time.
Right.
And then they start slipping back because implementation and things change and faculty changes and et cetera, et cetera. So the principal there now is looking at whether the cost of the program and the investment in the program should continue or whether we should be looking at something else. So by the end of this year, we will be coming to the board perhaps with a policy program change at that school, which will be very controversial. But
well,
they may have.
No,
not necessarily.
Well, it will be for those teachers that love it.
Well, no. See, you're assuming that's going to be the outcome, though. It's not controversial if we don't change.
I have a feeling.
You said they're coming back with recommendation at the end of the year. Well, that means you already know what the outcome is.
No, I have a feeling that we won't have the outcome in time for the decision. You know that our scores come out after the school year has begun. This decision will have to be probably made sometime, you know, in the spring in order to make it move. So there could be a transition. For example, if I were to have to do this today, I would say to you, let's do a transition where we're starting to continue the program but buy more open court materials to supplement the program and work its way out of it than cold turkey. Right. So we will come to you with options. It won't just be cold turkey.
What I like about this, what I like when I was reading it, what I like in the explanation coming out, is more proactive rather than reactive, chasing our tail all the time. This is low, this is go over here, which I saw beginning to go on at Edgewood. Much more proactive, much more intervention, much more coming in, what is going to be be best and move us forward? Because we do. We have a phenomenon that you just mentioned with math, but look at that. And we obviously have students that are capable of learning that they're producing. What, rather than continue to move on that, what do we need to do overall to move forward? Things like making sure grade levels professional development, what can we do in professional development, all these things, rather than, okay, this was a hot spot today, so we got to go over here, and we only create another hot spot tomorrow over here. So.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That actually is the last item for discussion this evening. Is there, that leads us to the information session, or is there any other Board of Education discussion? Open items. Okay, hearing none. We have dates to remember. Thursday night is West Coast, grades 4 through 6, back to school. Holland Crest is not October 2nd. Huh?
It's
not Coronado.
October 2nd.
That was
Coronado. Mm-hmm. Who's
change 2?
Mm-hmm. October 2nd. Next Tuesday.
And our next meeting here is October 9th. Thursday. Oh, excuse me. And we, oh, no, I'm getting to that. And then our next regular board meeting is October 9th. We will have, we will adjourn this meeting this evening to a special meeting, which will be held Thursday morning at 7:15 in the morning. And we just have a couple of, what was it, closed session items?
No, open session.
Open session items to discuss. And, mm-hmm. and hopefully take care of that quickly.
Yes.
All right, and so we are adjourned at 7:55. Thank you.
Omelets. Thank you.
I'm going to walk my dog here, but there'll be some dog
names.